Hello, and welcome to yet another edition of the Writer's Bookshelf, brought to you, yes, by the Gingerlicious Company Presents. And we are in to, hopefully, the sunny month of May. Goodness, we're nearly getting to halfway through the year. First and foremost, I want to especially thank each and every one of you, because we've reached a special milestone. I started this podcast back in July last year. It's obviously coming up to July this year. I wanted to celebrate three sort of milestones, if you like. One being a birthday, obviously, July. It started on July the 14th, was it July the 18th? Goodness, my memory's just going a little bit. But anyway, round about then, I'll have to look in the diary. So that's sort of just a case of time, you know, the months, the weeks, sort of get there. And another one is when you start podcasting, I think to yourself, get the first one out of the way. You know, well done, you've done the first podcast. You've got a few listeners, a few people downloading, and you get to 50 episodes. It's quite a milestone. Get to 100, and then obviously 500 and 1,000 and stuff like that. And when you think about it, you probably don't want to be broadcasting a podcast more than once a week. Some people do them monthly or fortnightly, and I choose to do mine every week. So it's going to take that year to to get that 50th in. Was it 52 weeks if your maths is good? And obviously that was coming in, would have arrived sometime this year. This one going, I think it's the 44th episode, so that's just a case of time. But the real sort of milestone for me has been the 1K. We've got over 1,000 downloads, which is absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure you can appreciate, you know, I'm situated in the UK, lovely little small town, Silsden, in West Yorkshire, and you sort of plod on, if you like. Is that the right word? You keep going, and one of these sort of rich, famous, worldwide known people would get millions or certainly tens of thousands of downloads. You keep going, and I have to say yesterday, on Saturday, we reached the thousand plus. So thanks ever so much. For that. And I also want to share with you, I want to share a few things. Next year, me and the good Mrs. Driver will have been married for 25 years, goodness me. And I love her as much as I did on the first day we met. She's absolutely wonderful lady, wonderful human being and everything, and I will never stop loving her. We've been together 27 years in October. We're married in the June, so together 27, married 25. And just thinking about that, we've booked a few holidays, and it's not sort of, I don't think it's showing off or anything like that. Quite sort of excited about next year. We're going back to Prague in February. Absolutely loved, falling in love with that city. We're going back down to London in June to take in a little bit of theatre. But the real big one is, and I'm in my 50s now, you know that, and it's always a dream to, regardless of what people think, it's always a dream to go to America, and that's where we're going. We have booked to go to New York and spend some time there. Really looking forward to it. The Hotel Edison. So all you fantastic people that download or tune in or whatever, listeners and support in the good old US of A, then thank you. I'm flying over the pond. Which nicely leads me on to this episode, because this episode, called it Whitby and Things Gothic and Why. People that know myself and Roz a little bit better know that we like to go to the Whitby Goth Weekend, and we've recently been there. It's 20-odd. Roz knows, she's good like that. I don't think it's like the 27th time we've been or something daft like that. We've been going for God knows how long. Our youngest daughter, Molly, it was 23. She turned 23 in March gone, and she was still in the post year. when we started going. She was about 18 months, maybe a year old when she was going. So we went before then as well. You know, it's absolutely phenomenal. And it's my go-to place, I must admit. I know I've mentioned about going to... can you hear my phone buzzing? If you've picked up on that, I always tell people to... I always tell people to turn the phone off when they come in the studio, and that's buzzing. So you can tell I'm live behind the microphone. But at least it's not... At least we're not being evicted. No, I'm only joking. So we go to Whitby. As I mentioned, Prague and New York. But I've always liked Whitby. I don't know why. It's sort of my place. I can always remember going there for the first time. And if you haven't been, I think if you're listening and you're more local, you've probably been to Whitby. You might live London, Birmingham, further away, Scotland. Got some listeners in Scotland. Maybe you've been to Whitby. For people in... actually in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and people in America that have been listening, get yourself to Whitby. And it's obviously world famous. You know about Dracula. And I remember, it was in the 70s when I first went, and I can't remember, it's the only thing that I can't remember if it was on a school trip or when I was in the Cubs. I seem to think it was with the Cubs. And I can remember going to Whitby, falling in love. So I wouldn't have been even 10 years old, I might have been 7, 8 year old kid, going to Whitby, and just falling in love with the place, walking up the steps, just going under the whalebones, absolutely love it. Walking on the beach, the 199 steps, the kipper place, you know, the kipper shop, absolutely brilliant, the smoke kippers, and obviously the abbey and all things Gothic. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think it's always been with me, that sort of Whitby, even the fish and chips and just the people you meet in the shops. Some people liken it to sort of Diagon Alleyway. If you've never been before, you go over the bridge and up the cobble street to the, the abbey. It's just absolutely brilliant. And I think as poet, if people who are writing, if you're a writer, a poet, anything, if you're weaving your words of magic, if you're an artist, as in, you know, you might be oil paintings or sketching, drawing, whatever sort of artwork you are, photography as well. I think Whitby lends itself to so many creative outlets. And if you ever sort of, I always feel, if you're feeling sort of down or feeling a little bit sort of weakened, if you like, it's happened to me a couple of times. You know, sometimes you feel a bit tired. Sometimes you're a bit fed up. There might be things that go on, that are going on in your life. Might be things happening in your life. You might just feel a little bit sorry for yourself. I don't know. And you've got to pick up place. And I do know that people sort of get on a plane and might go shopping at Leeds or London and spend loads of money, and, oh, I've been in a shopping spree, I feel a lot better. Or, you know, I've jet set it off to sunbed, sun, sea and sangria. But Whitby is my place. I really love it. Gives you some inspiration for writing, you know, poetry, short stories, plays, anything you want to do. For me, it just works. I'm gonna just, if you haven't read the, in fact, I've just inspired myself to reread Dracula. I haven't read it for a while, and I'm just annoyed with myself, because if you've been to the studio, I have various bookshelves. Looking now, but one to the right in the corner, which is sort of middling bookshelf, books on there. The one to my right is sort of, everything gets sort of thrown on there, you know, a bit of an untidy one. And the one sort of more or less in front of me is my special box, if you like. And I forgot about this. I thought I'd got it all. I used to have there's a speaker there now on the top, and there used to be a plant on there, which I moved. I had a bit of water spillage once, and I thought I'd sort of sorted out, you know, mopped it all up. I'm sure I did. It's four sort of shelves stacked four. I'm sure the bottom one's okay, but the top one, I thought I got all the water and some of the books. They haven't been damaged, but just reminded myself of it, because luckily, the wonderful little hardback book of Dracula, and continue me just wiping the cover there. It hasn't suffered. It's slightly damaged on the inside. Those little hardback books, and they've put one of those paper covers on, which is sort of damaged on the front now. But, you know, I'm not maybe too worried about that. The book is still readable. There's just a little bit, not so much, just at the front, the back, just where the water's got it. The pages are all okay, but it's on the back and the front. There's a little bit of water sort of stain on there, which I'll just have to live with. But you know, that's, I suppose it gives it a little bit of I suppose it gives it a little bit of a little bit of character. But it's absolutely fantastic, the book Dracula. If you haven't read this, or you don't know about Abraham Stoker, just to remind you, Abraham Stoker was born near Dublin in 1847. He was virtually bedridden with an unidentified illness until the age of seven. After graduating from Trinity College, he followed his father into a career as a civil servant in Dublin Castle, writing journalism and short stories in his spare time. In 1876, he met the actor Henry Irving, and 2 years later became manager of Irving's Lyceum Theatre in London. Through Oscar Wilde's parents, Stoker met his wife Florence Balcombe. He wrote many books, of which only Dracula, published in 1897, is widely remembered, and he died in 1912. So I'm not going to sort of bore you to death with the details. It's a fascinating book, and let's not forget, you know, it's, I really love this book. It's sort of somewhat in diary sort of form, as in, you know, chapter one, it starts off on the 3rd of May, and it takes us right through, you know, obviously to the very end, and it sort of flicks between Jonathan Harker, Dracula, and all, you know, the other sort of characters in there, Van Helsing, and it's just a phenomenal book, and it's it written in 1897, and it's still, just look at all the influence of excuse me, just not just Dracula, but the old vampire. It's put Whitby on the map, and obviously Dracula is going to be here for sort of ever, really. That sounds strange. Obviously it's a vampire, not the whole concept of vampires, and I can go on and on about, you know, other vampires that have been invented, Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Lestat and all that sort of thing, how many vampire films have there been, and all the, I'm not saying all the offshoots, but it's all connected. You know, where would we be with horror, so to speak, with even the 60s Hammer classics, you know, with the late great phenomenal Christopher Lee. So think about this: if Bram Stoker had never penned the book, then Whitby would not have been on the map, would have been famous for everything related to Gothic, and also, as I said, all the artwork, the photography, the Whitby Goth Weekend, you know, people are travelling from all around the world to see Whitby. But not only that, all the sort of movies, other books, everything, you know, the True Blood series, Sookie Stackhouse, and all things like that. It's absolutely, you know, through one man's sort of creativity, if you like, and that sort of Victorian darkness, if you like. You know, going back to Prague again, if you go over Charles Bridge, it has that, it always has that vampire feeling for me. If it's sort of, if it's dark, you've got the lamplight, a little bit of mist, fog, that sort of thing. The coaches over the cobbled streets, and as I said, that's Victorian era, that Victoria setting, and something, you know, a bit cliche, but something lurking in the shadows, and the murder and the blood and all this sort of on edge, you know, spine tingling, all that sort of thing. It's brilliant, and a lot of sort of things lend itself to that, and I do like, you know, for me, yes, you know, I look at it as a, people will say it's a horror story, it's a love story, obviously Dracula being in love, immortal and all that, but also I like it because in the time it was written, you can say, you know, England, Great Britain, whatever, at you know, still out there, been very influential, the Victorian era, Oh, actually, that's if we go to the war, the end of the Victoria era. I think Queen Victoria died in 1901. But going to the last sort of 4 years of the Victorian age, if you like. But very, very, religious country, and everything's good, and the Victorians sort of prim and proper. And obviously this dark side of people, that sort of... If you look at Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that good and bad verse, that good versus evil and that sort of thing. So I do like it, as in that thing, and then that concept, and you find yourself torn, as in you might think you're an upstanding member of the community and doing that sort of thing, but then you do like that sort of darkness, and you do have a little bit of a soft spot for Dracula, and maybe a woman, do you want to be seduced by Dracula? It's all good stuff. So I would recommend reading that if you haven't already read it. Go for it. If you're like myself, you probably need to revisit it. Fantastic piece of work. Okay, another one that I found, My Gothic Heart. Goodness me, edited by Charlie Castelletti. Another little hardback book. It was go to a lovely little bookshop in Whitby. And they always, I just love it, as you probably gathered. My Gothic Heart, a little hardback book, and it's just a collection of poetry and prose, which brings the Gothic together, and a little dip in, if you like. It's not obviously a novel or something to get your teeth into. It says this: it is unutterable. I cannot live without my life. I cannot live without my soul. My Gothic Heart is a tantalising anthology celebrating Gothic writing in all its forms, from wild passion to the lore of the supernatural, from a fascination with death to a longing for pleasure. Here is a powerful mix of prose and poetry that cannot fail to stir the emotions. Goodness me, are you stirred already? And there's things I'll just dip into a little bit. We've got things from Dante Rossetti, Emily Bronte, Elizabeth Browning, Christopher Marlowe, Wilfred Owen, George Eliot, Oscar Wilde, Mary Shelley, Lord Tennyson, Lord Byron. And I'll just flick. The introduction just says, let me just see how long it is. It goes on to say, when one hears the term Gothic, a few associations come to mind. Uninhabitable terrain and moorland, castles, abandoned fortresses and abbeys, anything supernatural, the uncanny, problematic anti-heroes, heightened emotion and manipulation, melodrama, narrative arcs, dread, fear and a whole lot more. At the same time, while reliant on this generic register, there is no singular element that marks a text as Gothic. What the Gothic does is take everything we know about this world and everything we don't to an absolute breaking point. Its extremity transcends the limits of our bodies, intensifies our deeply held emotions, and examines the possibility of an afterlife and what or who is to be found there. The Gothic, as we know it today, has come to encompass a mood, an aesthetic. Through my selections, but the author's not mine, I have taken liberty with the term Gothic. So please read on. Now, Joseph Sheridan, Le Fanu, goodness me, and this is from Carl Miller. And just a very short verse here, very short few lines. These are just, as you probably guessed, just snippets from poetry. Some poems in their entirety, in its fullest form. And some, just snippets, and same with the prose. You are afraid to die. Yes, everyone is. But to die as lovers may. To die together. So that they may live together. Ooh, powerful stuff at the powerful stuff from the beginning. What I shall do is I shall flick through the shall I bear with me, I've sort of marked this one up. Right. I do like this one. This is from the brilliant Mr. Oscar Wilde. And it goes like this. I love this one. Could we dig up this long buried treasure? Were it worth the pleasure? We never could learn love's song. We are parted too long. Could the passionate past that is fled call back its dead? Could we live it all over again? Were it worth the pain? I remember we used to meet by an ivied seat, and you warbled each pretty word with the air of a bird. And your voice had a quaver in it, just like the linnet, and shook as a blackbird's throat with its big last note. And your eyes, they were green and grey, like an April day, but lit into amethyst, where I stooped and kissed. And your mouth, it would never smile for a long, long while. Then it rippled all over with laughter. 5 minutes after, you were always afraid of a shower, just like a flower. I remember you started and ran when the rain began. I remember I never could catch you, for no one could match you. You had wonderful, luminous, fleet, little wings to your feet. I remember your hair. Did I tie it? It always ran riot, like a tangled sunbeam of gold. These things are old. I remember so well the room and the lilac bloom, the beat at the dripping pane in the warm June rain, and the colour of your gown. It was amber brown and two yellow satin bows from the shoulders rose. And the handkerchief of French lace which you held to your face had a small tear left a stain. Or was it the rain? On your hand as it waved adieu, they were veins of blue. In your voice as it said goodbye was a petulant cry. You have only wasted your life. Ah, that was the knife. When I rushed through the garden gate, it was all too late. Could we live it over again? Were it worth the pain? Could the passion past that is fled call back its dead? Well, if my heart must break, dear love, for your sake, it will break in music, I know. Poets' hearts break so. But strange that I was not told that the brain can hold in a tiny ivory cell God's heaven and hell. And that is Roses and a Rue by, of course, Oscar Wilde. Beautiful stuff indeed. I'll just flick through. this one's called Pain Has an Element of Blank by Emily Dickinson. Pain has an element of blank, if cannot recollect when it began, or if there were a day when it was not. It has no future but itself. Its infinite realms contain its past, enlightened to perceive new periods of pain. Just talking of a very, very short snippet. In fact, just one line from Lobert's. You bring me laundry. Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And it just says, my devil has been long caged. He came out roaring. Good stuff indeed. Edward Carpenter, excuse me, Parted Lips. Parted lips between which love dwells, only a little space of breath and shadow, yet here the gate of all the world to me. Excellent stuff indeed. Okay, I'm just flicking through because some are Obviously longer than others. The Christina Rossetti, what would I give? What would I give for a heart of flesh to warm me through? Instead of this heart of stone, ice cold, whatever I do, hard and cold and small of all hearts, the worst of all. What would I give for words, if only words would come? But now, in its misery, my spirit has fallen dumb. Oh, merry friends, go your way, I have never a word to say. What would I give for tears, not smiles, but scalding tears, to wash the black mark clean and to thaw the frost of years, to wash the strain in grain and to make me clean again. Good stuff. Another one here from Anne Bronte. Oh, they have robbed me of the hope. Oh, they have robbed me of the hope. My spirit held so dear. They will not let me hear that voice my soul delights to hear. They will not let me see that face I so delight to see. And they have taken all thy smiles and all thy love from me. Well, let them seize on all they can. One treasure still is mine, a heart that loves to think on thee and feels the warmth of thine. Brilliant. Brilliant. And all these are all from the Gothic, all from the Gothic scene. Okay, you know, I'm flicking through, you can hear the pages. Bear with me, all my lovely podcast followers. it's such a, just a, one of these books. What I do like about this is, and I'm sure, what I like is, if you've got a big hardback novel, you're not going to lummock that about, oh yeah, on a train or in your car. And I do like, I know people, you can download things to your mobile, and the Kindle and stuff like that, but these little pocket size, well, just be a little bit bigger than the pocket size, or just, if you've got a big pocket, shall we say, these little hardback books. And what I do like is, if you've got sort of 5 minutes here or 5 minutes there, the good thing is, you can just dip in. It's not a sort of a novel where you think, I've really got to, you know, get stuck in here and stick with it because, I want to find out what's happening. You can just dip in. You can flick through, obviously, the other, you know, contents, read a poem, get inspired, take a little bit from Wuthering Heights, take a little bit from Jekyll and Hyde, Dracula, that sort of thing. And it puts you in the... It puts you in the mood, I think, and it just sort of, keeps you going. Okay, just thinking about that, I knew it was here somewhere. Bram Stoker, guess what he wrote? Dracula. Okay, just a very, very, just a short paragraph here. To one thing I have made up my mind. If we find out that Mina must be a vampire in the end, then she shall not go into that unknown and terrible land alone. I suppose it is thus that in old times one vampire meant many, just as their hideous bodies could only rest in sacred earth. So the holiest love was a recruiting sergeant for their ghastly ranks. So I'll snip it there from... there's a little bit from Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. I'll read a little bit of it. It's a little bit more. I'll just read part of it. Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. You must create a female for me with whom I can live in this interchange of those sympathies necessary for my being. This you alone can do, and I demand it of you as a right which you must not refuse to concede. The latter part of his tale had kindled anew in me the anger that had died away while he narrated his peaceful life among the cottagers, and, as he said this, I could no longer suppress the rage that burned within me. I do refuse it, I replied. and no torture shall ever extort consent from me. You may render me the most miserable of men, but you shall never make me base. In my own eyes, shall I create another like yourself, whose joint wickedness might desolate the world? Be gone. I have answered you. You may torture me, but I will never consent. You are in the wrong, replied the friend, and instead of threatening, I am content to reason with you. I am malicious because I am miserable. Am I not shunned and hated by all mankind? You, my creator, would tear me to pieces and triumph. Remember that, and tell me why I should pity man more than he pities me. You would not call it murder if you could precipitate me into one of those ice rifts and destroy my frame, the work of your own hands. Shall I respect man when he condemns me? Let him live with me in the interchange of kindness, and instead of injury, I would bestow every benefit upon him with tears of gratitude at his acceptance. But that cannot be. The human senses are insurmountable barriers to our union. Yet mine shall not be the submission of abject slavery. I will revenge my injuries. If I cannot inspire love, I will cause fear, and chiefly towards you, my arch enemy. Because, my creator, do I swear inextinguishable hatred? Have a care, I will work at your destruction, nor finish until I desolate your heart, so that you shall curse the hour of your birth. A fiendish rage animated him as he said this. His face was wrinkled into contortions too horrible for human eyes to behold, but presently he calmed himself and proceeded. I intended to reason. This passion is detrimental to me, for you do not reflect that you are the cause of its excess. If any being felt emotion of benevolence towards me, I should return them 100 and 100-fold. For that one creature's sake, I would make peace with the whole kind. But I now indulge in dreams of bliss that cannot be realized. What I ask of you is reasonable and moderate. I demand a creature of another sex, but as hideous as myself. The gratification is small, but it is all that I can receive, and it shall content me. It is true, we shall be monsters, cut off from the world, but on that account we shall be more attached to one another. Our lives will not be happy, but they will be harmless and free from the misery I now feel. Oh, my creator, make me happy. Let me feel gratitude towards you for one benefit. Let me see that I excite the sympathy of some existing thing. Do not deny me my request. Excellent. Excellent. A little bit from Wilfred Owen. A few more. She sleeps on soft last breaths, but no ghost looms. Out of the stillness of her palace wall, her wall of boys on boys and dooms on dooms. She dreams of golden gardens and sweet glooms, not marvelling why her roses never fall, nor what red mouths were torn to make their blooms. The shades keep down which well might roam her hall. Quiet their blood lies in her crimson rooms, and she is not afraid of their footfall. They move not from her tapestries, their pall, nor pace her terrace, their head tombs, lest aught she be disturbed or grieved at all. And that was The Kind Ghosts. And we'll just have a few more, and then we shall wrap up this little episode of the writer's bookshelf. I'll tell you what we'll do is just bear with me. I always say that, don't I? Just bear with me. I tell you what we shall do. We shall finish on, we've got one here by Keats. Some might be another one there. No, we'll finish on this. We'll okay. I'll tell you what to do. We'll finish on. We've got two more. I've got two more. One from Sarah Teasdale and one from John Keats. We'll start with John Keats. It's called Bright Star. And it goes like this. Bright star, would I were... Start that again. Bright star, would I were steadfast as thou art, not in lone splendour hung aloft the night, and watching with eternal lids apart, like nature's patient. Sleepless, eremite, the moving waters as their priest-like task of pure ablution round earth's human shores, or gazing on the new soft fallen mask of snow upon the mountains and the moors. No, yet still steadfast, still unchangeable, pillowed upon my fair love's ripening breast, to feel forever in soft fall and swell, awake forever in a sweet unrest, still to hear her tender taken breath, and so live ever, or else swoon to death. And this last one is If Death Is Kind, and it's by Sarah Teasdale. Perhaps if death is kind and they can be returning, we will come back to earth some fragrant night and take these lanes to find the sea and bending, breathe the same honeysuckle, low and white. We will come down at night to these resounding beaches and long gentle thunder of the sea, here for a single hour in the wide starlight. We shall be happy, for the dead are free. Good stuff indeed. So I do hope, once again, you have enjoyed this episode of the Writer's Bookshelf. Once again, thank you for all your support and for all you lovely people listening. As I always say, find out a little bit more about me or get in touch via the website, daviddriverauthor.com, or find me on Facebook, which is David Driver Author. And if you like what you've been listening to, tell all your friends. And of course, I will be speaking to all of you on the next episode. Goodbye for now.